We've got an action-packed program this week on Texas Scorecard Radio. In the news roundup, you'll hear about a local official who, shocker, wants to raise taxes. We'll also hear about the Texas Association of Business showing its liberal stripes again. And we'll hear about the conflict in the Texas GOP on holding officials accountable. We've also got an interview with Beau French, candidate for state representative, who is the victim of one of the dirtiest tricks we've seen in Texas politics. And we'll conclude with a commentary from Michael Quinn Sullivan. Welcome back, friends and neighbors, to Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Let's get started with the news roundup with Reagan Reed from the Houston Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Harris County Judge Ed Emmett up to some bad behavior. Tell us about it.
So Harris County Judge Ed Emmett recently delivered his Harris County State of the County address to the Greater Houston Partnership, which is basically a big business moderate group. And in that State of the Harris County address, he was introduced by House Speaker Joe Strauss, who came in all the way to Houston in order to sing his praises. And rather than talking about real issues like Harvey and flooding, it really devolved into sort of an establishment rhino love fest between the two of them, praising each other and then throwing glowing praise at Sarah Davis, the most liberal Republican in the House.
Yeah, and so they pushed back real hard against property tax reform.
Correct. Ed Emmett mentioned that there were several reform bills filed, and he was very happy that they were killed, and he actually thanked Joe Strauss for killing those and really fired back at certain state officials who he didn't name, but it was pretty obvious he was talking about Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick and Senator Paul Bettencourt and others, and really launched an attack against them for pushing property tax reform.
Yeah, and Bettencourt and Patrick responded, though.
They did. They launched a press release accusing Emmett of wanting higher taxes because he's pushing for a bond, and they were not very complimentary of him. They fired back.
Yeah, it's very interesting to follow. Thank you for that report, Reagan. Listeners can read more about it at texasscorecard.com.
Thank you.
Now let's talk to Ross Kessig, VP for Local Bureaus with Texas Scorecard. Ross, you're writing about Texas Association of Business, or Texas Association of Liberal Business, as we often call them, out with a new scorecard that's drawing a lot of questions, mainly because they're in favor of sanctuary cities. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Texas Association of Business actually opposed efforts by conservative lawmakers to ban sanctuary cities. Sanctuary cities are cities that instruct law enforcement to undermine our federal immigration laws. And so Texas Association of Business actually took a position in support of continuing to allow law enforcement to undermine federal immigration laws.
Yeah, so, you know, conservatives, this is a main issue for Republican primary voters, voters in general, Texans in general, and legislators responded to that and moved forward a bill to stop local governments from undermining federal immigration policy. And then you see this group that's ostensibly for, you know, the interests of business out there saying, hey, we're just liberals. we're against enforcement of immigration laws, and that seems to be their kind of M.O.
Yeah, and they did Democrats look good and to hurt conservatives. I mean, I don't think anyone could argue that sanctuary cities are good for business. It's not really even a business issue. In fact, the highest rated lawmaker on this little scorecard TAB put together is a Democrat.
Yeah, yeah, their quintessential pro-business politician is a Democrat. So they were kind of misleading the public, though, in their description about this vote. Tell us about it.
Yeah, they echoed a lot of what the liberal media said. They claimed that passing the sanctuary city ban would actually lead to racial profiling and would also discourage illegal immigrants from reporting crimes in their community. The truth, however, is that the sanctuary city ban, the legislation, actually explicitly prohibits racial profiling, and it actually protects residents who report crimes in their communities. It also improved existing laws by giving a presumption of legality to people who have driver's license. So this whole idea that cops are going to start harassing drivers and pulling them over, suspecting they're illegally here in the country is just completely misleading and untrue.
Yeah, those facts are pesky things. Well, thank you for that report, Ross. Listeners, you can read more about it, texasscorecard.com. Next up in the roundup, let's go to Kerry Cheshire with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. You know, we've been covering this issue in the Republican Party in Texas of local county parties censuring their public officials who are kind of out of step with the party. And there have been some developments on that with some of these resolutions percolating up to the state Republican Executive Committee. So tell us what's going on there.
Sure, Tony. So as most people know, the Rule 44 censure rule was adopted at last year's Republican Party of Texas convention and basically allows local GOPs to issue a formal reprimand to lawmakers who aren't acting in accordance with the core principles of the Republican Party of Texas. We've seen them passed in Cherokee County against State Representative Travis Clardy there, and we've seen them passed in two counties of State Representative Byron Cook, Anderson County and Hill County. And even though Byron Cook has already announced that he's not intending to come back to the Texas legislature and leaving House District 8 an open seat, we've seen this issue become, you know, kind of go progressing through the SREC and come up for a vote.
Yeah, and so this came up for a vote over the weekend. Very impassioned debate over the issue. We've got a clip queued up of one of the SREC members, Randy Dunning, giving an impassioned plea in favor of the resolution. Let's go to the clip.
Folks, this is huge. I mean, if we can't deal with this one, we can't deal with anything. And I'm sorry when people say, oh, we can't make public officials mad because they may not donate to us. Well, then we have done something that I think none of us want to go home and tell our constituents that we've just done. We've said the money is all that matters. We have said that the money is all that matters. Principle be damned. We will do whatever it takes to keep the money flowing rather than dealing with serious complaints made by serious people brought under a serious process that has dealt with, frankly, in my opinion, a serious problem we've had in this party for years. I strongly encourage everyone in this body to vote in favor of the censure resolution.
And that was Randy Dunning of Texas Senate District 16. Now, Kerry, what was the result of the vote there at the SREC?
Well, it was very interesting. Even though a majority of the SREC voted to agree with the resolution, we still saw the measure be defeated because of a requirement that it require two-thirds support from the total body of the SREC. So you saw members abstain from the vote and members vote against it and members walk out of the room. All of those counted as basically votes against censuring Byron Cook and holding him accountable, even though there was a 20-page censure kind of list of charges against him by two of his counties.
Yeah, so I think one of the takeaways from this vote at the SREC is that people in the Republican Party, kind of rank-and-file activists, might have a little bit better idea where their SREC members stand, whether they are against people like Byron Cook, who's a traditionally obstructed conservative reforms in the Texas House and kind of had this whole litany of charges against him. Are they against that kind of guy? Or are they for him?
Sure, absolutely. You know, we've seen grassroots Texans become more and more educated and aware about what goes on in Austin and how their elected official votes. And we're seeing them become more and more aware with how their SREC official votes and how the party actually matters. You know, ever since Republican Party Chairman James Dickey was sworn in, they've been really focusing on the grassroots and going in a much more kind of responsive, pro-activist direction. And I think right now with this record vote, activists all across the state are going to get a chance to see how their SREC voted and take that issue directly to them. You know, all of these people stand for election too at the party conventions in June. And I think it'll be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, I think you might see more contested races for SREC. A couple of the SREC members running for office. Can we mention them quickly?
Sure. So Candy Noble, running to be a state representative up in Collin County, abstained from the vote. If you go to texasscorecard.com, you can see in our coverage she has a statement in which she says it was unintentional. And reports from the room appear to kind of corroborate that. There's also Gail Stannard, who's running for state representative down in Houston, who was absent and was voted against the censure
her
by proxy.
Yeah, her proxy.
The very concerning thing on how all of that transpired, and I think voters should be educated on that issue and take that issue to standard.
Well, I think this has been educational for Republicans around the state, and I think something that those two candidates will probably have to answer for out on the campaign trail. Thank you for that report, Kerry.
Absolutely.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's a pleasure to welcome to the program Bo French, candidate for state representative in Fort Worth, running against a long-term, long-established liberal Republican, Charlie Guerin. You know, politics is notorious as a dirty business. This last cycle, the political establishment did all of these attacks against candidates who are challengers, you know, attacking people's marriages, running people's names through the mud. But we've really learned over the last few days one of the dirtiest, most despicable stories I've ever heard, and that's why we've invited Mr. French on. Thank you for coming on the program. You're the victim of what I've seen is kind of the ugliest attack I can recall in Texas politics, and I'd like you to tell our listeners about it. I think there's some things that they can learn about the nature of politics in Texas from what you've had to endure.
Well, Tony, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here and to speak to all of the like-minded listeners you have on your program here. Yeah, really the most amazing thing is, you know, when we decided and prayed about and talked to our family and friends about running for office, everyone warned of course that lots of falsehoods would be levied our way and lies and attacks, and I expected that, especially against me or against even my wife. But I never imagined that someone would try to have our kids taken away from us. And really, I almost see it as like a weaponization of a government agency against your political opponent.
Yeah, so
it's really frightening.
Let's talk about the facts of what occurred. So what you're referring to, there's a lawsuit filed just recently in district court there in Tarrant County, and you're alleging that your opponent from the last cycle, and you're running again against Guerin, that one of his top staffers basically made a false claim with Child Protective Services attempting to have your children taken away as a punishment for challenging the political status quo.
Well, and I think it's, you know, we lay out a compelling case in our lawsuit that is really the result of a year and a half of having to deal with this. You know, all of this started in the final days of the 2016 primary, when my wife and I were at a fundraiser in the Stockyards. Pat Green was kind enough to headline that for us. It was well publicized. Everybody, you know, in this area knew that we were going to be there. And lo and behold, while we're at the fundraiser, and my wife's parents were here at the house with our children, a CPS caseworker and a police officer show up at our front door at 7 o'clock in the evening, and allege that they've had a report of abuse in our house and other unsavory details that we spell out in the lawsuit. Really just the worst kind of allegations you could imagine, especially as parents, and just thinking what someone was cooking up over in the other campaign headquarters on what they could launch against us. And that really started an 18-month battle to try to get to the truth of who was really behind this. We suspected, of course, it was the other campaign, but we didn't know for sure until we finally CPS closed their case against us some months later, and then but not before they had repeatedly come to our house. In fact, they came 3 days in a row.
Wow!
In the final days before the election, and then of course, once the election happened, I think it was a little over a month before they just went radio silent. It was a little over a month before we heard anything back from them again.
Yeah,
of course they
and they're trying to interview your children, you know, separate your children off, and you know, it's a very intrusive investigation. This isn't just a let's answer a few questions from the clipboard here at the front door.
No, in fact, they were initially there was that at the door, and of course my in-laws were smart enough to know that this was an attack on us, a false attack on us, and
sure.
So they didn't allow CPS in. But all of my children were standing. It was bedtime for my kids, so they were all standing there, getting ready to go to bed and excited to see who was at the door.
Right,
you can imagine
right.
they're all crowded around and like, oh, cool, a police officer.
Right, right.
But yeah, then the caseworker starts talking about specific claims, naming one of the children. I mean, they had a child's name. They had a specific allegation against that child.
Yeah, and
of course,
the origins of this is you know, basically a political operative for the other campaign overhears your wife having a conversation about one of your children, and then takes some small small details, and then extrapolates out all of these lies from that. That's what has been alleged in the lawsuit.
And actually what we detail in our lawsuit was that there were two different instances with two different campaign workers for Charlie Guerin's campaign who either were engaged in a conversation with my wife or overheard something she was saying to another person nearby. And they took components of what they heard in those conversations, put them together, of course, dramatically exaggerated them, of course, twisted them, and then those things ended up in the lawsuit. Well, of course, it's our belief that the only way those things could have, ended up in the CPS report. It's our belief that the only way those things could have ended up in that false report to CPS was those campaign workers, of course, talked about those things and then hatched this malicious plan against our children.
Yeah, and so basically, you had I think one of your children had to go to the chiropractor to have a rib adjusted, and they take from that they allege that you are breaking your children's ribs. You know, this is outrageous allegation from this little tidbit of fact, and then it makes it sound like it's based in reality, because there is some, you know, reality of the allegation at the bottom, but then it's all of this outrageous lie on top. Let's talk about the defendant in the suit. So the defendant is not your political opponent, Charlie Guerin. It's the operative himself, David Sorensen. Fascinating fact here, your opponent is a longtime Republican member of the Texas House of Representatives, a notoriously liberal Republican, but nonetheless a Republican. The defendant here, Sorensen, who is kind of the key operative on this scheme, is a well-known Democrat. Tell us about that.
Well, that's something that it shouldn't surprise anybody who knows my opponent and his politics well. Even though his website claims he's our conservative voice in Austin, everybody knows that he's one of the most liberal members of the Texas House. So it's not surprising that, of course, his staffers would be drawn from the ranks of the liberal side of the fence, including David Sorensen, who is a political consultant for the Tarrant County Democratic Party. In fact, his attorney, this is just a side note, but his attorney, when we were initiated the first legal proceedings against him to try to get to the bottom of this, the attorney he hired was Steve Maxwell, the former chair of the Tarrant County Democratic Party. So I think that kind of tells you where his allegiance lies.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's noted in the lawsuit that when he was initially served, he was first found, your lawyers or the process servers actually found him at the pool party, the end of the summer pool party for the Democratic Party. So, this is a core Democrat operative, and bringing in, notoriously dirty, Republicans and Democrats do these things, unfortunately, but not things like this. I mean, this is dirtier than most. This is not what I think you would have expected to sign up for whenever you decided to enter into the world of politics.
There's no question about that. I think that anybody who decides to step up and serve their community And in doing so, are challenging the entrenched power structure, the those who crave their positions and thrive on their positions. You expect them to hit you below the belt, and of course that happened. As anybody who was paying attention in that last election, 2016 primary election, saw lots of twisting of truth and allegations that were not true. But to actually threaten to have your children removed from your home and put in state care, it's just, I've been following politics a long time, been interested in politics, following campaigns for a long time. I've never even heard of anything like this. This is far and away the worst political attack I've ever even heard about.
And done right there in the last few days of that campaign. You know, we're all used to this kind of the dirtiest of the tricks comes the Friday before the Tuesday, Election Tuesday, and, you know, at that last moment when you can't respond. And sure enough, that's basically, it was somewhere in that time frame that this CPS investigator shows up at your home. All of that now is resolved, so now you're going on offense. I think I'm excited to see you fight back and hopefully hold these people accountable to be able to say this kind of stuff isn't acceptable in Texas.
That's right, and we're not just going on offense now. We've been working on this since the March 2016 primary. I mean, we've been hard at work on this to try to get to the bottom of it. Of course, they've resisted every way possible. The last time we were in court, we filed initially what was called a Rule 202 petition because we wanted to depose these campaign workers. That was an interesting time because David Sorensen's response in court was essentially an admission that, yes, he is in fact the one who made the report, and that we were just trying to chill his free speech.
Yeah, he's trying to play the victim, that, oh, don't sue me, I'm just out here, you know, speaking freely in campaigns. These are the guys who want to suppress everyone else's right to free speech, but whenever they go engage in dirty tricks, they go and hide behind the Constitution, and which, you know, good on them. Go for it. Try it out. But I think the courts are not going to look too kindly on that. Well, thank you for coming on the program, Mr. French. Tell people where they can learn more. We're going to have the article or the lawsuit up on TexasScorecard.com, so we'll have plenty of more information about it there. But tell people where they can learn about your campaign.
Well, the easiest place to learn about my campaign is my website, which is www.beaufrench.com. And, of course, I have a Facebook page that you can link to from my website. And, you know, in the coming days and weeks, we'll talk more about this lawsuit and what the truth that we're trying to expose, so that people can be aware that this is the price for stepping up and fighting against the political establishment.
Well, thank you for standing strong, and good luck with the campaign. We need more strong leaders who are above these kind of dirty tricks and willing to fight back and hold those who would do them accountable.
Well, Tony, thank you so much, and thank you to all your listeners, and God bless.
Thank you. Some Republican representatives are pounding their chest over adopting a process to elect a Republican Speaker of the Texas House. In this week's commentary, Michael Quinn Sullivan reminds us that while process is important, it's the results that really matter.
Republicans hold two-thirds of the seats in the Texas House, but for the last decade, they've been letting Democrats dictate who holds the powerful office of Speaker. That may finally change, but will it matter? With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. After years of pressure from grassroots activists, the House Republican Caucus finally approved a process for selecting a nominee for Speaker. Theoretically, this means Texas will never return to the bad old days that produced the regime of disgraced Speaker Joe Strauss. Strauss is currently fleeing office with his tenure marked by both controversy and corruption. Strauss came to power in 2009. That's when 11 Republicans colluded with 65 Democrats to overthrow Republican Speaker Tom Craddock. Since then, the GOP has gained supermajority status, but Strauss has clung to power thanks to a unified Democrat bloc and the spare Republicans necessary to get past the 76-vote constitutional threshold. Rather than fight him, Republican lawmakers spent several sessions acquiescing to the Democrats, even as voters got more and more angry. But with Strauss and his cronies tanking Governor Greg Abbott's agenda this session, the pressure became too much for the Republican lawmakers to bear. Thanks to efforts by conservatives to force the Republican House caucus to select a speaker nominee in caucus, Strauss knew he couldn't retain the gavel and is heading for the hills. That said, the scheme the caucus implemented is one only a lawyer could love. It's not a simple majority vote, but rather a complex series of do-over votes in which GOP candidates for the speakership have to get two-thirds or three-fifths of the support of the caucus before being the official nominee. But it marks at least a move in the right direction. The caucus has to go through these convoluted motions, and they will be judged on the results. And results are ultimately what matter. Voters aren't going to be mollified by Republicans picking another Strauss-like obstructionist. You see, voters never had a personal problem with Joe Strauss. It was his open obstruction and defiance of the conservative agenda, favored overwhelmingly by Texas voters, that got him and his pals in trouble. Some Republican lawmakers don't seem to fully get that. They think simply electing a speaker, even a bad speaker, in caucus will protect them from angry voters in the future. They think Republican voters care about process. They think wrong. Republican voters, like all voters, are far more worried about results. Voters are looking for governing action, not Byzantine parliamentary processes that have a GOP label slapped clumsily on the back bumper. Voters are way too savvy for that today. Texas taxpayers, and especially Republican primary voters, want conservative candidates to deliver on long-promised reforms like reforming the state's insane property tax system. And they don't really care what process they use to do it. Let me be clear about something. The problem in Texas government has been the Texas House. The Texas Senate, under Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, has delivered on promise after promise on issue after issue. It's the difference leadership makes. As you know, the Texas Senate is governed by the Lieutenant Governor, who answers directly to the people. As such, Mr. Patrick has continued to deliver on the reforms taxpayers demand. The Texas House is where the inmates pick their own leader. And unsurprisingly, the Texas House is where those reforms have withered and died on the vine. Up until now, Republican lawmakers would go home and rightly blame Strauss, all while glossing over their own complicity in his power. Having all the GOP caucus vote for a single speaker who they will then support on the House floor means they now own whatever results that person delivers or fails to deliver. Republican voters will judge Republican lawmakers on the substance of the policy results, not the style of their campaign promises. That's true heading into March 2018's GOP primary, and it will be even more true at the end of the next legislative session. Republican lawmakers have done it. They've now created a process, even a flawed one, for picking a Republican nominee for speaker in caucus who they'll have to support on the House floor. They and we must now go about the business of judging the candidates for the speakership on the merits of what results they will deliver for Texas. They had better pick correctly. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
I agree entirely. The adoption of a process by the Republican caucus to elect a Republican speaker of the Texas House is a great first step towards ending the coalition with the Democrats that has strangled conservative policy reforms in this state. But the waffling and appeasement of liberal Republicans who created this problem in the first place is very concerning. Lawmakers need to know that it's the results that matter, and it's the results that we expect. Well, that's the end of the program. Thank you for joining us. Come back next week for Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.